Chapter 4. Mrs. B. The little naughty wretch. Do you know, Mrs. Pryor, my grandson, George Milliken, spilt the ink over my dear husband's pants, which he keeps in his great dictionary, and fought with my child, Frederick, who is 3 years older than George, actually beat his own uncle. Mrs. P. Gracious mercy. Master Frederick was not hurt, I hope? Mrs. B. No. He cried a great deal, and then Robert came up, and that graceless little George took a stick, and then my husband came out, and do you know George Milliken actually kicked Mr. Bonington on his shins, and butted him like a little naughty ram? Mrs. P. Mercy. Mercy. What a little rebel. He is spoiled, dear madam, and you know by whom? Mrs. B. By his grandmama Kickleberry. I know it. I want my son to whip that child, but he refuses. He will come to no good, that child. Mrs. P. Ah, madam, don't say so. Let us hope for the best. Master George's high temper will subside when certain persons who pet him are gone away. Mrs. B. Gone away. They never will go away. No, mark my words, Mrs. Pryor, that woman will never go away. As he has made the house her own. She commands everything and everybody in it. As he has driven me, Mr. Milliken's own mother, almost out of it. She has so annoyed my dear husband that Mr. Bonington will scarcely come here. Is she not always sneering at private tutors, because Mr. Bonington was my son's private tutor, and greatly valued by the late Mr. Milliken? Is she not making constant allusions to old women marrying young men, because Mr. Bonington happens to be younger than me? I have no words to express my indignation respecting Lady Kickleberry. She never pays anyone, and runs up debts in the whole town. Her man Bulkley's conduct in the neighborhood is quite, Mrs. P. Gracious goodness, ma'am, you don't say so. And then what an appetite the gormandizing monster has. Mary tells me that what he eats in the servants' hall is something perfectly frightful. Mrs. B. Everybody feeds on my poor son. You are looking at my cap, Mrs. Pryor? During this time Mrs. Pryor has been peering into a parcel which Mrs. Bonington brought in her hand. I brought it with me across the park. I could not walk through the park in my cap. Isn't it a pretty ribbon, Mrs. Pryor? Mrs. P. Beautiful. Beautiful? How blue becomes you. Who would think you were the mother of Mr. Milliken and 7 other darling children? You can afford what Lady Kickleberry cannot. Mrs. B. And what is that, Pryor? A poor clergyman's wife, with a large family, cannot afford much. Mrs. P. He. You can afford to be seen as you are, which Lady K cannot. Did you not remark how afraid she seemed lest I should enter her dressing room? Only Pinhorn, her maid, goes there to arrange the roses, and the lilies, and the figure he. Oh, what a sweet, sweet cap ribbon. When you have worn it, and are tired of it, you will give it me, won't you? It will be good enough for poor old Martha Pryor. Mrs. B. Do you really like it? Call it Greenwood Plus, Mrs. Pryor, the next time you pay Richmond a visit, and bring your little girl with you, and we will see. Mrs. P. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Nay, don't be offended. I must.
Kisses Mrs. Bonington.
Mrs. B. There. We must not stay chattering. The bell has rung. I must go and put the cap on, Mrs. Pryor. Mrs. P. And I may come too? You are not afraid of my seeing your hair, dear Mrs. Bonington. Mr. Bonington too young for you. Why, you don't look 20. Mrs. P. Oh, Mrs. Pryor. Mrs. P. Well, 25, upon my word, not more than 25, and that is the very prime of life.
Exeunt Mrs. B. and Mrs. P., hand in hand. As Captain Touchett enters, dressed for dinner, he bows and passes on.
Touchett. So, we are to wear our white cravats, and our varnished boots, and dine in ceremony. What is the use of a man being a widower, if he can't dine in his shooting jacket? Poor Mill. He has the slavery now without the wife.
He speaks sarcastically to the picture.
Well, well, Mrs. Milliken, you, at any rate, are gone, and with the utmost respect for you, I like your picture even better than the original. Miss Pryor. Enter Miss Pryor. Miss Pryor. I beg pardon. I thought you were gone to dinner. I heard the second bell some time since.
She is drawing back.
Touch it. Stop. I say, Julia.
She returns. He looks at her, takes her hand.
Why do you dress yourself in this odd pokey way? You used to be a very smartly dressed girl. Why do you hide your hair and wear such a dowdy, high gown, Julia? Julia. You mustn't call me Julia, Captain Touchett. Touchett. Why? When I lived in your mother's lodging, I called you Julia. When you brought up the tea, you didn't mind being called Julia. When we used to go to the play with the tickets the editor gave us, who lived on the second floor, Julia. The wretch. Don't speak of him. Touchett. Ah. I am afraid he was a sad deceiver, that editor. He was a very clever fellow. What droll songs he used to sing. What a heap of play tickets, diorama tickets, concert tickets, he used to give you. Did he touch your heart, Julia? Julia. Fiddle-a-dee. No man ever touched my heart, Captain Touchett. Touchett. What? Not even Tom Flight, who at the second floor after the editor left it, and who cried so bitterly at the idea of going out to India without you. You had a tender for him, a little passion you know you had. Why, even the ladies here know it. Mrs. Bonington told me that you were waiting for a sweetheart in India to whom you were engaged, and Lady Kickleberry thinks you are dying in love for the absent swain. Julia. I hope you did not contradict them, Captain Touchett. Touchett. Why not, my dear? Julia. May I be frank with you? You were a kind, very kind friend to me, in my youth. Touchett. I paid my lodgings regularly, and my bills without asking questions. I never weighed the tea in the caddy, or counted the lumps of sugar, or heeded the rapid consumption of my liquor, Julia. Hush, hush. I know they were taken. I know you were very good to us. You helped my poor papa out of many a difficulty. Touchett aside. Tipsy old coal merchant. I did, and he helped himself too. Julia. And you were always our best friend, Captain Touchett. When our misfortunes came, you got me this situation with Mrs. Milliken, and don't you see? Touchett. Well, what? Julia, laughing. I think it is best, under the circumstances, that the ladies here should suppose I am engaged to be married or, they might be jealous, you understand. Women are sometimes jealous of others, especially mothers and mothers-in-law. Touchett. Oh, you arch schemer. And it is for that you cover up that beautiful hair of yours, and wear that demure cap? Julia, slyly, I am subject to rheumatism in the head, Captain Touchett. Touchett, it is for that you put on the spectacles and make yourself look 100 years old? Julia, my eyes are weak, Captain Touchett. Touchett, weak with weeping for Tom Flight. You hypocrite. Show me your eyes. Miss P. Nonsense. Touchett. Show me your eyes, I say, or I'll tell about Tom Flight, and that he has been married at Madras these 2 years. Miss P.O., you horrid man.
Takes glasses off.
There. Touchett. Translucent orbs. Beams of flashing light. Lovely lashes veiling celestial brightness. No, they haven't cried much for Tom Flight, that faithless captain, nor for Lawrence O'Reilly, that killing editor. It is lucky you keep the glasses on them, or they would transfix Horace Milliken, my friend the widower here. Do you always wear them when you are alone with him? Miss P., I never am alone with him. Bless me. If Lady Kickleberry thought my eyes were well, you know what I mean. If she thought her son-in-law looked at me, I should be turned out of doors the next day, I am sure I should. And then, poor Mr. Milliken, he never looks at me, heaven help him. Why, he can't see me for her ladyship's nose and awful caps and ribbons. He sits and looks at the portrait yonder, and sighs so. He thinks that he is lost in grief for his wife at this very moment. Touch it. What a woman that was, a Julia, that departed angel. What a temperance he had before her departure. Miss P. But the wind was tempered to the lamb. If she was angry, the lamb was so very lamb-like, and meek, and fleecy. Touch it. And what a desperate flirt the departed angel was. I knew half a dozen fellows, before her marriage, whom she threw over, because Milliken was so rich. Miss P. She was consistent at least, and did not change after marriage, as some ladies do, but flirted, as you call it, just as much as before. At Paris, young Mr. Verney, the attaché, was never out of the house. At Rome, Mr. Beard, the artist, was always drawing pictures of her. At Naples, when poor Mr. M. went away to look after his affairs at St. Petersburg, little Count Posilippo was forever coming to learn English and practice duets. She scarcely ever saw the poor children changing her manner as Lady Kickleberry enters. Hush, my lady. Touch it. You may well say, poor children, deprived of such a woman. Miss Pryor, whom I knew in very early days as your ladyship knows, was speaking of the loss our poor friend sustained. Lady K.A., sir, what a loss. Looking at the picture. Touch it. What a woman she was, what a superior creature. Lady K.A. creature and angel. Touch it. Mercy upon us. How she and my lady used to quarrel. Aside. What a temper. Lady K.H.M.O., yes, what a temper.
Rather doubtfully at first.
Touch it. What a loss to Milliken and the darling children. Miss Pryor. Luckily they have you with them, madam. Lady K. And I will stay with them, Miss Pryor. I will stay with them. I will never part from Horace. I am determined. Miss P.A. I am very glad you stay, for if I had not you for a protector, I think you know I must go, Lady Kickleberry. I think you know there are those who would forget my attachment to these darling children, my services to her, and dismiss the poor governess. But while you stay, I can stay, dear Lady Kickleberry. With you to defend me from jealousy, I need not quite be afraid. Lady K. Of Mrs. Bonington? Of Mr. Milliken's mother, of the parson's wife who writes out his stupid sermons, and has half a dozen children of her own? I should think not indeed. I am the natural protector of these children. I am their mother. I have no husband. You stay in this house, Miss Pryor. You are a faithful, attached creature, though you were sent in by somebody I don't like very much,
pointing to Touchett, who went off laughing when Julia began her speech, and is now looking at Prince, and C, in next room.
Miss P. Captain Touchett may not be in all things what one could wish, but his kindness has formed the happiness of my life in making me acquainted with you, ma'am, and I am sure you would not have me be ungrateful to him. Lady K.A. most highly principled young woman.
Goes out in garden and walks up and down with Captain Touchett.
Enter Mrs. Bonington. Miss P.O., how glad I am you are come, Mrs. Bonington. Have you brought me that pretty hymn you promised me? You always keep your promises, even to poor governesses. I read dear Mr. Bonington's sermon. It was so interesting that I really could not think of going to sleep until I had read it all through. It was delightful, but oh, it's still better when he preaches it. I hope I did not do wrong in copying a part of it. I wish to impress it on the children. There are some worldly influences at work with them, dear madam,
looking at Lady K in the garden,
which I do my feeble effort to modify. I wish you could come oftener. Mrs. B. I will try, my dear, I will try. Emily has sweet dispositions. Miss P.A., she takes after her grandmama Bonington. Mrs. B. But George was sadly fractious just now in the schoolroom, because I tried him with a tract. Miss P., let us hope for better times. Do be with your children, dear Mrs. Bonington, as constantly as ever you can, for my sake as well as theirs. I want protection and advice as well as they do. The governess, dear lady, looks up to you as well as the pupils. She wants the teaching with you, and dear Mr. Bonington can give her. Ah, why could not Mr. and Mrs. Bonington come and live here, I often think? The children would have companions in their dear young uncles and aunts. So pleasant it would be. The house is quite large enough. That is, if her ladyship did not occupy the three south rooms in the left wing. Ah, why couldn't you come? Mrs. B. You are a kind, affectionate creature, Miss Pryor. I do not very much like the gentleman who recommended you to Arabella, you know. But I do think he sent my son a good governess for his children. Two ladies walk up and down in front garden. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.